Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Research shows that seeing your own history and culture reflected in the classroom leads to better outcomes for students. A recent court ruling found New Mexico's public education department is failing Native American students in part by not providing adequate culturally relevant materials. That could mean a lack of books that include their culture or community. It also covers a lack of opportunities to study their tribe's language in school. Did you have access to Native American studies or classes taught in your language? How can public schools work with tribes to better serve Native students? We want to hear from you this hour. Call 277-5866, or if you're outside the Albuquerque metro area, it's 1-877-899-5866. You can also email us at any point at letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to welcome in the studio this morning Kara Bobroff, Executive Director of the Native American Community Academy Inspired Schools Network. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, my name is Kara Bobroff. I'm Navajo and Lakota and serve as the Executive Director for the NACA Inspired Schools Network and was the kind of founding principal of the Native American Community Academy, which is a school located here in Albuquerque. We're celebrating our 13th year and many great accomplishments of our students in the past.
Congrats. Lucky year.
Yeah, thank you.
And I want to welcome also Dr. Glenaba Martinez, a professor at UNM's College of Education.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, everybody. My name is Glenaba. Most people know me as Glenny Martinez, and I'm a professor at UNM. And I also do work in curriculum, some consultation work, worked with the Indian Public Cultural Center's 100 years state and federal policy curriculum, currently working with the Indian Education Department, and have also taught and worked with Native youth who are incarcerated at YDDC and Camino Nuevo.
Thank you.
And I'm from Taos. I'm half Taos and half Navajo. Forgot to say that.
Thanks, Dr. Martinez. And so I just want to start out first. Judge Sarah Singleton ruled a couple weeks ago on this landmark education lawsuit, huge implications for Indian education in New Mexico. I just want to ask your initial reaction. Kara, you want to start?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there was a lot of anticipation and trying to see exactly where the judge would rule and when that would happen and the timing of it. I think that where we are in New Mexico right now is we're at a critical point where we can really reimagine and create an education system that meets the needs of Native American students and other students in a way that's very thoughtful. So I think that it's timely. I also think that the need has been there for a very, 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 very long time. When we talk about different types of achievement gaps, we never really talk about the huge gap that's existed in our communities around access to rigorous education that is focused on students' identity, their culture, their community, and also really thinking about how do we begin to think of building a system that supports Indigenous language development and for students to thrive. So just what we've seen when our students have been able to connect with those things, they feel much more connected to their school, and they are able to really cast a vision for the future that's really positive and something that they can work towards. So I think it's a great outcome, and excited to see what happens going forward. And I know that there's a lot of excitement about that, both around students, families, teachers, and also I think tribes as well. But also at the legislative level, what will happen there to be able to really make this become a reality? Because I believe April is the time that we're supposed to be able to have a plan and direction in place.
Right, next April.
Yep.
And Dr. Martinez, from this ruling, or just in general, what do you see as the state's biggest blind spots or areas to address when it comes to providing adequate education to Native students?
Well, I would like to preface that with continuing the answer to what Kara was talking about. And I think there's four major areas that this ruling could possibly have an implication for. It could have an implication for what we call socioeconomic political conditions of schooling, which is kind of the school climate, the community of climate, how they think about schooling. So you'd be looking at things like poverty. You would be looking things at LGBTQ. A lot of the issues that people often don't think about that affect the way students experience schooling. The second area would be curriculum. It definitely has implications for curriculum. The third area is it has implications for assessment, and it also has implications for policy. So if this ruling were to truly be implemented to achieve some form of social justice and equity, it would definitely have to address those four areas, which would call for systemic changes in the way we conceptualize in those schooling in those four areas.
I'm glad you bring up those four.
And maybe we can start with two, because I interviewed PED Secretary Christopher Ruskowski this week, and he was very focused on the assessment piece of this. So, Dr. Martinez, what do you think student assessments, teacher evaluations, school grading, all of those things that PED is very hyper-focused on would look like if they reflected the values of Native students or tribes?
Well, let's start off with the students. The assessments, for example, the students need to take the end-of-course exams. Those are usually required at the secondary level. The end-of-course exam would be more than what it is right now, which is a very essentialist perspective of Indigenous issues, if they are even incorporated into the assessment. So we would seriously consider the integrity of Native studies. In-depth knowledge would be in the end-of-course exams. The second area in assessment would be formative assessments that teachers themselves use in the classroom, where they would be more thoughtful about what counts as knowledge. They would use primary and secondary sources that have Indigenous origins for them.
And so that would mean reading first-person accounts.
First-person accounts, yeah, of whatever the issues are. And I think in area of, in terms of assessments of teachers, right now, New Mexico Teach, the domain I'm working with right now is Domain 1, which is they look at teacher how they prepare their lessons. And right now, Domain 1 is very
generic.
This is
speaking about the teacher evaluation system.
New Mexico Teach. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. New Mexico Teach right now is a very, I believe it de-skills teachers in terms of their content knowledge. I think it has some positive elements to it. But in terms of questioning, are teachers prepared to work with Indigenous peoples in New Mexico? Are they prepared to work with second generation Hispanic youth or Latino youth? I would say there is no measurement in that New Mexico Teach that really says, are we doing that? So it has implications for higher education. Are we preparing teachers to work with all the different populations in New Mexico? And that then goes to how higher ed is measured, which is using in-task and KEP standards in educator preparation.
What is that, KEP?
KEP is, these are two organizations that look at the standards that we use when we prepare people to become high school math teachers, middle school social studies teachers. We ourselves in College of Ed right now are in the state of high stakes standards. It's really binding, it's de-skilling, it's deprofessionalizing.
So the state's public education system is really like a complicated beast, right? So there's traditional schools, charter schools, community schools, Bureau of Indian Education schools. Kara, as far as the Naca-inspired schools, you have one school that's chartered by Albuquerque Public Schools. You have other schools that are chartered by the state. I mean, what does that mean in this complicated system? What difference does that make in terms of the support that you get?
Yeah, I think, NACA was a collaborative charter and really was, I think, an effort of the community in Albuquerque to create a school alongside the school district. So the school district's been very, very supportive and has also been able to learn from what we've learned from over the past, 10 plus years. So that's been a very positive thing. And I think that they're set up well to support innovation, whether that be a magnet school, a charter school, some of their early alternative programs that, kind of came out over the past, 20 years. So I think that's been a really great thing, is when you can complement what's already going on in an existing system of schools. As far as charter schools in the state, I think that's a little bit different. There's a statewide commission that serves them, and then they have a kind of to rely upon the support of a state education office. And so that's different, and I think it's just not set up necessarily to support schools in that way. I think when we look at some of the schools that are out in more rural or on reservation areas, the needs are a lot greater. And so there's a advantage to partnering with a school district, because they can help on some of those things that might necessarily be easily accessible to them, whether that be like facilities and basic infrastructure. But I think the most important thing is that whatever authorizer or whatever type of school that we have Native students attending, whether it's a charter or a public district, existing, school or magnet, or a BIE or a grant school, or a locally community-driven nonprofit entity, is that the mission is really, really important. And I think that we want to make sure that schools have a very broad mission that's the student experiences across the entire school, so that if the goals are that kids are academically prepared for college or career, that they have a strong sense of identity and they're holistically well, that the entire school and the community is part of that. And it's not just necessarily like one class or maybe one point in their educational experience that they're going to engage in learning about Indigenous studies or holistic education or service learning. It has to be really tied to who they are, where they're from. And then also a lot of the rigor I think that our students have been able to experience is really around things about learning around like self-determination, sovereignty, understanding the distinctness of Indigenous communities as well as not only locally but globally. So I think that any authorizer or any entity that can support that and also help the schools develop that is really, really helpful. I think the University of New Mexico's staff has been critical in that as well. So really bringing the expertise we have in our state together to map out what this would look like in any given system.
What do you think? How can PED better work with tribes to provide students with a culturally relevant education? Do you or your child attend a Bureau of Indian Education school or a charter school like NACA or others? What kinds of culturally relevant materials have teachers provided or would you want to see? Give us a call, 277-5866, or if you're outside of Albuquerque, it's 1-877-899-5866. You can also tweet us a comment with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. I want to bring another voice into the conversation now. Tricia Mokino is co-founder of the Karis Children's Learning Center and the Indigenous Montessori Institute. Good morning, Tricia.
Good morning. I'm from Kochti, Kiwa and Oke Wenge. I reside in Kiwa, but I'm from both communities, and we serve the Pueblo of Kochti Pueblo in partnership with the tribal leadership.
So why the Montessori method? Like, talk a little bit about what this brings to your students and your community.
Why the Montessori method? I think with Maria Montessori, she had an ultimate respect for children and recognized the power of children and the way they learn. And I think it was that spiritual philosophy that what has always been attractive, because our culture has really a reverence for children and just the belief that every child has a purpose. All children come with strengths and they come with a gift to contribute to our communities, but to the world as a whole. And for me, the Montessori method, that has always been parallel and very significant to supporting our children.
So we can't have this conversation this morning without mentioning the history of boarding schools in this state and across the country and in Canada. Generations of Native children were forced to attend schools away from their community, not allowed to speak their languages. How does your school and your teacher training program respond to that history?
So in terms of responding to that history, we know very well what's documented and what works for revitalizing languages, for strengthening languages, is the practice of immersion schools, which is very well, there's a lot of research around that, and Canada has done that, but with the Maori and Hawaiian schools, and so that's kind of the model that we were following. But after that, the dual language education model has been the only model in the United States to so-called close the achievement gap. That study was done with a large longitudinal study was done in Texas, but also with the Indigenous Montessori Institute, our director, Tracy Cordero, will be leading that. And that will allow people to access a training, a teacher training program in early childhood with a deep understanding of human development. But that will also allow people side by side to partake in the philosophy of Indigenous education and really center and learn about immersion and dual language, and why do we need to center our Indigenous worldview that is embedded in our languages. So it just goes back to what Kara said about helping children create strong, holistic identities and that self-esteem that they're going to need, because we know that we're all, you know, all these things are always, you know, thrown at us. So that is a really healthy way to navigate the world.
Kara, do you want to add on to that? I mean, how does that history influence the way NACA approaches education?
So what we've heard from our students and our families, I think of this one opportunity that our students had to in their seventh grade Native American literature class. So they had they were studying the boarding school era, and what they did is then did a series of interviews of both their family members and then other individuals who had either attended a boarding school or had some sort of experience with that. And there was a very strong presentation done by one of our students, and she talked with her grandmother, and you could read from what the young woman was talking to her grandma about. And I just remember looking at this dialogue that was going back and forth. And at the end, you know, her grandma was saying, you know, this is the way I experienced education. And it wasn't very positive, but found that the expectations were more around like what the future of her grandmother was going to be was very limited. And so her grandmother said to her at the end, kind of like, I'm really excited for you that you're able to study things that we weren't able to learn in school, and that you will have the opportunity to connect to your culture. You'll have the opportunity to connect to your language, and that you will be able to draw upon the things that are really important to our communities. And that makes me really proud to see you to be able to be a leader in that way. So, but this dialogue went back and forth. And what I think that was interesting about that was that she was the grandmother was explaining that kind of the setup of the school and the boarding school that she attended did separate her from her family, also had expectations that they would go into some sort of like housekeeping and or a role that was very limited in like what it was that she wanted to do. And her desire was to do something very, very different. So her thoughts and reflections back to her granddaughter was that you have the opportunity to kind of do whatever you want to do. And she thought that piece was really important. So just the idea of like who's setting the expectations for an entire community is really, really important. And then the young lady was like really excited in the sense of like had a sense of pride around like, yes, I do care about my culture. I do care about my language, and I do want to succeed in a lot of different ways. But it was a really beautiful conversation. And also, I think it was really insightful to see that you can see change happening, and you can see change happening in families. The families who missed out on language and culture, you can see that there's a deep loss. And so we see kind of this reconnection being healing both for our students in a very positive way, and then also for their families and for their grandparents, I think, in a way that I think is restorative. And so when you think about the power of a school and the power of an education, it's everything in the sense of it kind of sets you up for success long term. But it also, I think in this case, is really healing a lot of things that have been really detrimental to our communities. And also that carries on from, you know, a grandmother to their, you know, daughter to their daughter to their granddaughter. And it's just we know that it's there. And I think that's why there's a lot of alignment around, you know, in many Native American communities around the need for language, culture, as far as holistic wellness. People just see that and they feel that. And when that happens, there's a certain kind of transformation that takes place for students and a certain kind of transformation that takes place for the community. So all very positive, but there's a lot of things that do need to be addressed in that way.
That's a really powerful story. Thank you. We do need to go to a quick break. Keep those calls coming. The number is 277-5866. What would it look like for New Mexico to provide adequate education to all Native American students? Do you have questions or want to respond to anything you've heard this morning? Give us a call, 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com. Gloria.
You can tell a lot about a person based on what's on their walls. When conductor Marin Alsop was a kid, she begged her parents for some decor.
I talked them into buying me two posters, one of the Beatles and one of Leonard Bernstein.
Marin Alsop's Memories of Bernstein on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
If you wanted to see if an atomic bomb would explode, would you test it in the midst of 40,000 people? The U.S. government did that right here in New Mexico. I'm Stephen Spitz, the host of New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. And this Friday morning at 8, we'll talk to three victims of that blast, including two eyewitnesses. Friday morning at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, how New Mexico can do better by its Native American students. Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We are also on Twitter. You can use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. So before the break, we were talking about the ways our innovative programs that our guests have today respond to a really painful history. And, you know, how can the public education department in New Mexico work with tribes to address these issues? I mean, is there a fundamental trust to be earned back? Tricia?
There is a fundamental trust to be earned back because a lot of the breakdown of language and culture came with the introduction of schools. And when you think about, again, the research that is out there, language and culture are protective factors, they're resiliency factors. So when we go back to like my great-grandma or my grandfather who attended St. Catherine's Indian School and eventually running away or leaving those schools, what allowed them to survive was the language. And so often language is like language and culture is peripheral, and it should not be peripheral. It should be like the umbrella where everything else rains down from, because that is what allows people to heal. But it also goes to truth and reconciliation. What is the responsibility of New Mexico as a state? What is the responsibility of the education department? Because so many of us in our schooling have felt so much shame, and our children should not, you know, feel that. When they go to school, schools should be building on the strengths that our children come with. And we have so much of those strengths in our pueblos with our languages and our cultures and our families and our communities. And really an amazing leadership way of being in this world that, you know, they're called theocracies, but you don't see that very often in the world today.
Yeah, Dr. Martinez.
Yeah, this is going about real quick. When I think about the relationship between the state and the and Indigenous peoples, the 23 nations of New Mexico, I think we look at it in two ways. On the one level, we could look at it as a government-to-government relationship, which is something, sadly, the Martinez administration took a long time to understanding. But anyway, that's a side note, an important side note. So there's that government-to-government relationship between sovereign nations, okay, two states. On the other level, we have to think about it of a transformation at a deeper level, which is where Indigenous nations themselves just say, you know what, we're doing this because this is important to us. We're exercising our external sovereignty, our internal sovereignty, and we are going to do it with or without the state's with or without that relationship with the state. So it's important to understand here that in some of our Native communities, like my own Native community, we have a very strong educational system that has nothing to do with Western education. Our youth are taught very important ways to be as a Taos person. And I'm sure it happens in other Native communities. So we as a nation and other nations have to work to maintain that. And what we do in our Native nations should not be affected by high-stakes testing, or it should not be based upon our relationship with the state. So if the acting Secretary of State's of Education says manifest destiny, on the one level, it's incredibly offensive because he's been miseducated. But on the other level, you can say, you know what, this man said whatever, but you know what, we are maintaining our way of educating our youth using our own very specific Indigenous forms of knowledge. So I have two ways of looking at that. And I think we should exercise that autonomy to educate our youth as we see it necessary. And it may or may not be with white men's education, with vocabulary and, you know, all those things. It may be those core things that we use as a Native people.
Thank you for that. I think that's a good way to structure the conversation as well. Let's take some listener calls. Songtree from Bloomfield, what would you like to add to the conversation?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Songtree, and I am Taos Pueblo and Lakota, and I'm married to a Navajo, so my children represent three tribes. They go to two districts, and they range from a developmental delay to a regular education to a gifted education. So I just wanted to thank the NMPED because I was actually inducted, part of the inaugural family cabinet. And this is an initiative that was started by Hannah Scandera and now is through the family engagement coordinator Gloria Ruiz and Secretary CR, and they have taught me so much to be a better parent and a better advocate for my kids. I attended, I think it was like 6 in-person meetings in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and I learned about school grades, park scores, ICE station, which is the assessment for K through 2, the SED Bureau, the Indian Education Act, the Board of Education and their responsibilities, the school boards of education and their responsibilities, the Open Meetings Act, and I mean, it was a rigorous education for me, and it has helped me make my voice so much more stronger and resilient, because it's a partnership that has helped me begin to make the waves of change in this district, and they do not want it. I mean, my name has been slandered. My kids have seen the effects of what happens when you start to speak up. And
what district is that, Songtri? Sorry, which school district?
Bloomfield Schools.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I just want to thank them, because they have made me, you know, more aware of how much effort you have to put in to get your kids through public schools.
I see. Thank you so much for that, Songtri. Let's take a call from Sarah from Santa Fe. You're on the air. What would you like to add?
Hi. I am excited to hear about this. These new models or changing models of education. I think it's really exciting. I'm curious how the schools respond to the great diversity in New Mexico of the tribes, especially with the immersion. Are those specific to specific tribes and languages, or is it kind of bridging the different languages and tribes and pueblos? I'm just curious to hear how that works.
Tricia Mokino of Karis Children's Learning Center. Yeah, do you want to respond to that?
So with languages, we have to always remember going back to each tribe is a sovereign nation. So then their language is the intellectual property of their specific tribe, even though there's 7 tribes that speak Karis, each tribe has ownership over its specific dialect of Karis. So with Karis Children's Learning Center, that is specifically serving the tribe of Cochiti. So really what I feel like this landmark decision by the court, really there's an opportunity to support tribes in doing the number one thing that they want for their children, and that is to carry on their languages. And so when we think about funding dollars are important to helping build the capacity of training people in native language immersion techniques and understanding better early childhood, but also always, always connecting that back to the indigenous worldview of the tribe, of that language. So it really, immersion really is dependent on each tribe, and to work in partnership with the public school central offices where those, you know, depending on where those tribes, what school district they fall under. And yes, that is a lot of work, but it is so necessary if we really want authentic, true achievement in all ways that honor tribes and what they want for their children and still allow children to gain the academic skills that they need.
Tricia, you mentioned funding, and I asked you when we talked before about, you know, how are these going to be funded? These are independent schools. And you said something that really struck me, which is it's not a matter of funding. It's a matter of will and commitment. I mean, say more about what that takes for tribes to really grow their own independent programs that look like that really reflect their needs. I mean, what is that process like?
Well, it always has to be a process that's done in partnership with the tribal leadership. That always has to happen. But in terms of will, it has to be the will on everyone's part to want to shed our idea what education has and has been. And education and outcomes that have been imposed on us have not served our populations well. So in terms of will, it's about, you know, first changing that mentality that we can educate children in dual language programs and they can succeed you know, in two languages or three languages. And then it's the will of the people outside of our communities. It's the larger state of New Mexico. It's PED understanding, going back to Glenaba's, what she said about we have our own way of educating our children, and we want that to be recognized and have our children experience that every day in school of course, what's allowed. So I think it comes down to will first, and then you can commit the dollars to that.
Let's go to a listener call. Edward from Santa Fe is on the line. Edward, what would you like to add?
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that one of the key findings in the Yazzie case was we have some of the strongest and most progressive policy already on the books in these areas. We have the nation's first bilingual multicultural education act that's funded. We have the Indian Education Act and the Hispanic Education Act, all of which, you know, call out the importance of language and culture in our education program. The problem is there's a huge gap in implementation of those, of what those acts call for. And I can give one specific example. For the past 6 years, I've taught in the College of Ed at UNM the one course, you know, out of 130-ish, you know, credits that the future teachers take in the College of Ed. If they're not getting a bilingual or a specialized ESL endorsement, they get one course in working with culturally and linguistically diverse students, and that's the course I've been teaching. And I can tell you, you know, while young folks that want to be teachers are very well-intentioned, you know, very capable, they really lack experience and an understanding of language and culture, and a 16-week course is simply not enough to prepare them. Most of them, you know, don't have Native American friends or immigrant friends. They've never been to a Pueblo feast day. They really lack kind of that experience and understanding. And so I think we need to do a lot to, if we're going to live up to what the legislature has asked us to do in these specific acts, then there's a lot to do in teacher preparation. And the first thing we need to do is really resource those courses, resource those programs, and ensure that we have professors and then match up, you know, requirements for everyone to be taking a lot more preparation in this area.
Thanks so much for that, Edward. Really important, interesting point there that you have all of these non-Native teachers who may have really good intentions and want to be providing this education. Dr. Glenaba Martinez, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm glad, Edward, I'm really glad you brought up that point, because that's been an issue that we've dealt with educator prep in the five areas that the College of Ed at UNM deals with, which is physical education, special education, elementary education, early childhood, and secondary ed. And it has been an uphill battle, a challenge, to try to get our colleagues to understand that it's important to not only just talk about the superficial elements of multicultural education, but there are some other issues that deal with racial macro and microaggressions that our students face and our teachers face in schools when they're trying to introduce new forms of knowledge. The LLSS 315 course you're referring to, yes, there should definitely be more than that. And I do know that Dean Ochoa at the College of Ed has really been working hard to try to incorporate the Indigenous faculty into providing courses. But again, this is a systemic change. I was an associate dean for educator prep for 1 year. That was a big challenge for me, because I was almost asked to advocate on behalf of the state PED on the things that they wanted to do, and I was supposed to impose a policy on educator prep, and it was really went against my ideals, and so I didn't stay on that position. But it is very deprofessionalizing in the College of Ed or higher education level as well, and we really do need to revamp how we prepare teachers, whether they're from early childhood all the way up to secondary, because we aren't doing a very good job.
Are you a non-Native teacher who works with Native students? What would you like to add to this conversation today? Are you a grandparent, aunt, uncle who cares about the education system? What would you like to see change to help ensure that all Native kids can succeed? Give us a call, 277-5866, or if you're outside the Albuquerque area, 1-877-899-5866. You can also email us, letstalk@kunm.org, or leave us a comment on Facebook. Let's take a quick break. Keep those calls coming. This is Let's Talk New Mexico, 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
Key findings in a new study say Native Americans are three times more likely to die from chronic liver disease and cirrhosis than the rest of the population. Also, millennials aged 24 to 34 are dying from liver disease at an increased rate. We'll talk about the factors that go into liver disease and how to avoid them. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
There is no tariff on the steel in your car or truck. So, even if it doesn't run, it could be a very worthwhile donation to KUNM. As long as it has an engine and a clear title, we can tow it away, and KUNM will get the proceeds. To see if yours qualifies, go to KUNM.org. Under support, click Donate Your Vehicle. Or if you prefer the phone, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about Indigenous education. Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. Let's go to a listener, Alyssa from Albuquerque. You are on the line.
Hi. Yes, I just would really love to see incorporated to early development students up to secondary, as other teachers have stated, is mindfulness and loving kindness. I think it's very important. New Mexican graduates, you know, do not have extracurricular opportunities for that. There's not a lot of opportunities like that for children. You know, as a Yaqui who doesn't know their roots and everything, I think it's important for children who have that type of upbringing, have the opportunities to find out about their ancestral roots, culture, language, and be able to participate in the Gathering of Nations powwow in April here in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Thank you so much for that, Alyssa. Adding in mindfulness as part of that growth and resilience process. I want to remind our listeners, we have in studio this morning Kara Babra from the Naca Inspired Schools, Glenaba Martinez from UNM, Tricia Mokino from the Karis Children's Learning Center. And I want to welcome also in the studio this morning, Mac Hall, founder of the National Indian Youth Leadership Project. Good morning, Mac.
Oh, good morning. I'm Cherokee. I'm from, my parents are from Oklahoma and Eastern Cherokee, and I've been married into the Navajo Nation for 40 years now, and I went through the Native Teacher Education Program at the University of Washington back in the 70s, and so I call myself a recovering teacher and principal. I've been a principal of two tribal schools, and in the early 80s, I founded the National Indian Youth Leadership Project.
The National Indian Youth Leadership Project incorporates outdoor adventure in service learning, in and out of school programs, a summer camp. It operates in dozens of sites throughout North America. Why is this work so important?
Well, I'm coming at this topic from a little bit different perspective maybe than some of the other presenters, but within the project venture model, one thing that we've been noticing is we're getting really amazing evaluation outcomes in terms of social emotional learning, which is an area that I think has major significance for Native kids.
And what does that mean, social emotional learning?
Yeah, basically it comes down to when young people learn a specific set of skills around learning to form healthy relationships, learning how to work in a group to solve problems, learning how to work in a group to make decisions, learning how to take individual and group responsibility. Those skills, when they're learned at the appropriate age, kids are much less likely to get involved in high-risk behaviors and alcohol and drugs and get involved with the legal system and all that. And they're much more likely to stay in school and graduate and do something positive with their life after that. So this is really important, and we work with BIE schools, public schools, charter schools. A few language immersion schools are implementing Project Venture, and earlier this year I was in Minnesota, presented to a representatives of over 100 BIE schools, and I had sent them an article from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on social-emotional learning to read ahead of time. So after I did my presentation, they unanimously agreed that this is exactly what our schools are missing. This is exactly what our schools need. This is what our kids need. And I also did I was on a panel at the National Service Learning Conference this year, and there were several academics from different universities talking about social-emotional learning and how you teach it in a classroom. And I probably offended everybody, but I basically said, I don't really believe this stuff can be taught in a classroom. It has to be learned hands-on, experientially, through a process of interaction with other people. It's got to happen that way. And so...
And Project Venture has multiple sites in New Mexico as well. It's based out of Gallup.
Yeah. And overall, we have about 65 sites right now across the U.S. and Canada. I just spent last week in Canada visiting 5 programs that are implementing Project Venture and doing really cool stuff. And so the social-emotional learning, we feel, is we're seeing those outcomes in our evaluation. We're seeing teachers coming back with testimonials about how they're observing this behavior happening with their kids. And so we're able to capture that in our evaluation. And we really believe that when you focus on developing resilient youth, you begin to address some of those historical trauma issues as well, because kids have tools in their backpack now to deal with situations that come up, and they know how to process information and how to solve problems and where to go when you need help and how to ask for help and all those things.
Let's go to a listener call. Logan is on the line from Albuquerque. Logan, what would you like to add?
Hi, I'm actually a new teacher. I teach 7th grade New Mexico history at a middle school in Albuquerque, and I have a pretty diverse classroom. I have some Native students, Hispanic students, white students, and I guess I need some tips, some help with ideas on how to connect Native students to their massive role in New Mexico history and help the other students understand, like, challenges that those groups face. Does that make sense?
Thanks for that question, Logan. Glenaba, would you like to take this on?
Yeah. Actually, Tricia was part of this as well, too. But there's actually 2 curriculum projects that that you could refer to for lesson plans, unit plans. One of them was sponsored by the Indian Public Cultural Center, and it's called Indigenous Wisdom. And so I believe if you go to the IPCC, Indian Public Cultural Center's website, you might be able to link onto Indigenous Wisdom. But you'll find all kinds of lesson plans from pre-K to 12th grade. That's one way. That's something that you can implement within the next 2 weeks in your class. I would also hold on to maybe in about a year or so, the Indian Education Department is currently working on a curriculum, and they are now doing the middle school and high school. They finished high school, and I did the New Mexico History unit, so I'm working with my team on that. But they will have curriculum materials as well, too. Logan, I'm really glad that you're teaching and you're asking these questions. And I would just say that, as a teacher, you're going to have to do a lot of the investigation yourself, finding external resources. You can contact me at UNM. That's GLENIE at UNM.edu. And I can help you if you need some help with some of the resources. So I hope that helps.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Have a great academic year. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Tricia, do you have anything else to add for new teachers looking to learn a lot more?
Yeah, I think in terms of it's not just new teachers, it's all teachers, because sure. If we look at the teaching population that teaches in all our public schools, most of them are non-native. And so I think it behooves all of us, not just the teachers, because teachers work so hard in defense of teachers, but non-natives in general. What role does white supremacy culture play in education, and our role as as what is the role of a non-Native teacher to educate themselves in examining what they perpetuate in terms of an education that has been so oppressive and has not worked so well for our children. So how do non-Native teachers, how does the white community hold itself accountable to whatever toxic notions that they continue to perpetuate? How can they be more inclusive? How can superintendents and school districts not just offer one culturally, linguistically sensitive whatever seminar class at the beginning of the school year, but those really should be PLCs, professional learning communities, throughout the school year, because we need to continue also to address anti-bias, anti-racism in our classrooms and throughout the state.
So you see, you imagine a system where teachers and white teachers and others are getting together and talking to one another, like, how can we break down these biases together?
Yes, but it has to be with the support of their principals, their superintendents. It has to be in support from the New Mexico Public Education Department, because there are such amazing programs such as Project Venture, such as College Horizons. College Horizons is an amazing model that helps Native Americans get to college. And so my question is, why is College Horizons or a model like it in all public schools that have high populations of Native American? The same thing with Project Venture. Why is that not in all schools? Those should just be mainstays in our schools.
Mac, as I was learning about Project Venture and the National Indian Youth Leadership Project, something that struck me is how your program has been successful in so many different tribal communities. And that really speaks to your success in building relationships with tribal leaders, tailoring your programs to each culture, incorporating knowledge of tribal elders. I mean, can you talk about that process and maybe with an ear for lessons that PED can take from that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We've had a policy since the beginning of NIYLP that we only go where we're invited, and so we're not out trying to sell our program to anybody, and we only respond to invitations. So I just visited a program up in Northern Ontario that started 5 years ago, and now they're transitioning to another funding source, but the program's going to continue. But I remember when I first went there, this is one of the communities that has probably the strongest language retention rates in Canada anywhere, and up in Northern Ontario. And so we got the newly elected chief to go with us to a group of elders, and we showed him a slideshow of the things that we do in Project Venture. And we got the Ojibwe thumbs up from the elders. They didn't understand any English at all, but they got it. And they saw what was going on, and then the chief translated for us. And so that's been one of our most successful programs in Canada. And one of the things that we've seen in our programs lately, and I think this is really important, or I would mention it, but in that program, in 5 years of Project Venture with their mid-school kids, there hasn't been one suicide, and they were kind of leading the country in suicide 10 years ago or more. And we're also working in several schools at Pine Ridge in South Dakota, and the school we started with up there, we started with one, now we have five schools going, but there also hasn't been a suicide among the mid-school age kids that have been in the program since it began 3 years ago. And so those are sort of unanticipated outcomes. I guess we're not a suicide prevention program, but again, when you're building resilient kids, they can take care of stuff when it comes up and help each other and know where to go to get help and ask for help and help each other and all that. So there's some amazing stuff going on. And Project Venture was really based on advice from Native elders about how to work with kids and how not to. And so we really took that to heart and developed the highest level evidence-based program in the country that is something that we're really proud of, that a lot of that advice came from elders about how to do this work.
Tricia, yes, please.
I just want to piggyback off of what he said in terms of elders. When communities do immersion, you naturally are creating an intergenerational approach to education, which gets all the voices back in our children's daily lives. So I wanted to piggyback off of that because that is so important. So thank you for saying that.
There is an email comment. Barbara says her kid's school is located on tribal land, and she says the Pledge of Allegiance there's in three languages when they hold assemblies, and she would like to see more of this. One thing we mentioned earlier that I wanted to get back to as well, and we can respond to Barbara's comment as well, is just that, you know, the needs and life experiences of students, say, at a tribal school in the Navajo Nation are going to be different than those of a Native student going to school in Albuquerque or Santa Fe. And so what are some, like, common needs and what are some ways to tailor between rural and urban? Kara, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing that is common is that there's a kind of universals around bringing core cultural values into schools that help set up the frame for Indigenous leadership. I think that's one thing. I think holistic wellness is another aspect of thinking of students and all aspects of who they are, so that it's not just like focusing on one particular part of a student's educational experience, so that their social emotional wellness, their physical health, and their connection to their community, their culture, as well as their academic achievement and growth and development. I think the other thing is the connection to the community. That is huge. Bring families into schools, have families leading different things that make sense, understanding the things that are important to that community, whether it is a school in, you know, Newcomb and or a school in Albuquerque. Like, what are the things that are seasonally important, like things that you can coordinate and connect to that school. I think the other things that are different are, you know, when you're on the Navajo Nation, I know they're looking to establish their own school district as if they were a state. And so they're in the process of making that change. That's a huge systemic shift. And I think that's really, really powerful to then be able to set their own standards, the way that they assess schools and learning, as well as thinking about, you know, things that they want to teach around Navajo language and government and language as well. But engaging people in that process, the schools tend to be the center of the community, and it's where people gather on the weekends. It's where people gather for different events. And I think really opening that up and having access being provided to everybody is really, really important. Distance is a challenge. And so I think, you know, the role of technology is going to be important as well. And then thinking about what are the things that students want to pursue higher education when they're still in high school. So a lot of efforts in New Mexico have been focused on dual enrollment, as well as, you know, access to advanced placement courses, but making those things relevant to kids and their interests and their needs and their background. I think those are some things that would be a little bit, you know, different, but they're still possible. So I think those are things that come to mind.
One last Twitter comment from Mach Pia, who says, learning your own history from a perspective of resistance and resilience is critical to emotional wellness. I think that's a good last thought. And Glenaba, we have just about 20 seconds left. What are your final thoughts?
Well, I was going to invite people to come to an education summit on September 20th, 2018 this year. It's going to be the Rotunda, which is at the Tech Center, because the Institute for American Indian Education, we met with 12 indigenous communities throughout New Mexico, and we got this information. And I was going to share some of the outcomes of that, but we don't have time.
We can put a link to some information on our website if that works. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who called in. Thank you so much to our guests, Glenaba Martinez, Kara Bobroff, Tricia Mokino, and Mac Hall. And we can put a link to all the programs we talked about on our website, KUNM.org. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or comment on our Facebook page. Next Thursday, we'll discuss how to balance new development with preserving existing neighborhood cultures. That's next time on Let's Talk New Mexico. If you missed any part of the show today, you can listen on our website, KUNM.org. Thank you to the D-Numbers in Santa Fe for letting us use your song as our theme music. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. May Ortega screened your calls. Celia Rainey live-tweeted the show. Sarah Gustavus produced today's show, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.